All right. Welcome, everybody. I am Kevin McDonald, executive producer of New Mexico in Focus, joined by environmental reporter extraordinaire Laura Paskus. We're going to get everybody a chance to get logged in and watch and submit questions and do all that kind of stuff before we get into this. Really, this is just an unbelievable story in terms of massive contamination at Holloman Air Force Base. So we're going to talk about all the ins and outs of that here in a minute, but do want to just give everybody a chance to get in and so we don't miss out any of the important parts. But just sort of as we're waiting for people to get on, how long have you been working on this story?
So I've been interested in the contamination from the Air Force for a few months, but this story came together really astonishingly quickly, actually.
Okay. And we'll talk about why that is here in a minute, too. Kind of tied to reporting you've been doing on Cannon Air Force Base, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, it looks like we've got a handful of people here, so we do want to encourage you, if you have questions for Laura, specific questions about this story that you've already read and want to send in, I want to pass those along to her. We'll do our best to answer them. Or if we're, as we're talking about it, if questions come to you, please just fire those away on Facebook, and we will do our best to answer them. So let's start with a big one. How bad is the situation at Holloman? What did you find out?
It's pretty bad. So it turns out that there's some groundwater contamination below Holloman Air Force Base. And a few years ago, the EPA set standards for these human-made substances. The whole class of compounds is called PFAS, at 70 parts per trillion for a lifetime human exposure. And the levels down below Holloman are 18,000 times that recommended lifetime.
Something like 1.5 million per...
Yeah, 1.294 million parts per trillion.
That is amazing. So I guess the big question that everybody wants to know is, was Holloman aware of this and for how long, and do we know that?
Right. So to back up a little bit, a few years ago, the Department of Defense started looking at its bases nationwide to see where there might have been exposure to this firefighting foam that has the PFAS in it. And then they started doing site inspections to see if the chemical could have been released there, has it gotten into the groundwater or the soil? And so they started doing these site inspections.
And were they compelled to do that?
They were compelled to do that.
Okay.
And so the report from Holloman is dated November 2018.
Okay. So that is really pretty recent. And real quick, before we get into the health risks, wanted to make sure that everybody understands this is a very different situation than what we know and what you've reported at Kirtland, right?
That's right. It's a totally different types of contamination and pathways.
That was a leak of jet fuel there at Kirtland. And this, again, best we can tell, they have the special... retardant for specifically petroleum fires that they do training with all the time, and that's a known source of these PFAS contaminants, right?
Mm-hmm. And they're part of a family of human-made compounds that were manufactured beginning in the 1970s, and in the United States, most of them have been phased out over the last decade or so. But the same family also includes the chemical, if you remember news reports from a few years ago, that was in Teflon. Mm. So it's that same kind of family of human-made compounds.
I guess that's another question, is why would anybody still be using any of these things if we know this, but there's not any rules or regulations in place?
Right, and they're persistent. So these compounds stay in the ecosystem, in the water, for a really long time. They travel through the groundwater, but they also bioaccumulate, so they move up the food chain. So even if we get rid of them, if we stop making them, we stop using them, if they're present in the environment, they're persistent.
And do we have a way to clean them up that we know of?
That is a great question. I don't know the answer.
The research I did, it doesn't seem like anybody has a known technique for that. I'm sure that they're looking into that, and so we'll hear more about that too. But let's take a step back and talk about, so 18,000 times acceptable levels, and so what kind of health risks are we talking about from what's going on at Holloman?
So PFAS they're what's considered an emerging contaminant, so we're still learning about them. They're still being studied. But among the health impacts that the government and researchers and scientists understand is they're related to certain types of cancers, certain types of complications with pregnancy and birth defects, also liver disease. So there's kind of a wide range of pretty serious health impacts.
And do we know what kind of danger the folks at Holloman have been put under then?
That's another really good question. So according to the site inspection report, the tests where PFAS was found are from groundwater wells below Holloman. And that groundwater supply, according to the report, is not used for drinking water. It's brackish water. And you might have heard people talking about the importance of brackish water in a state like New Mexico, where water resources are scarce, and there's been some discussion of how do we take advantage of that brackish groundwater. But right now, it's not a drinking water source for anyone, according to the site inspection report. But I know, like, it makes me think about all of the airmen and personnel and firefighters and construction workers and all sorts of people who've been exposed to the contamination over the decades when they were actively working with these substances. But according to the site inspection report, which is kind of like a very beginning kind of analysis, there isn't danger to the public from exposure to drinking water. I think the New Mexico Environment Department is very interested in finding out more about that.
What about surrounding areas, agriculture, people living around there?
So the city of Alamogordo has drinking water wells, and there are private drinking water wells in that area. According to the site inspection report, they draw from that same brackish water base, so they wouldn't be using that brackish water for drinking water, but the New Mexico Environment Department has said that they're interested specifically in 10 or 11 wells around the base and making sure to find out, first of all, if they are being used and if they are being used for irrigation, industrial, or potable water use.
Okay. And this is a good time to point out that if you haven't already, go to the New Mexico Political Report to read your report on this. And within that, you also have a link to the full report if people want to read more about that, too. And so you're still working on this. There may be more on this week. But it also comes at a time, basically, right as one administration was leaving and another administration was coming in. So you did have the opportunity to talk to the new Environment Secretary. What was the response there?
I did. So Secretary-designate James Kenney was very concerned about the report, very concerned about, what needs to be done immediately to understand the situation and also what kinds of options New Mexico has in terms of compelling the Air Force to be working on a cleanup, mitigation, remediation. The New Mexico Environment Department and the administration of Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham are very concerned about the issue and trying to understand exactly what's going on.
And in your report, there's also a lot from our congressional delegation, specifically Ben Ray Lujan. What's he trying to do?
So it's actually thanks to a letter from Representative Ben Ray Lujan and then Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham to the Secretary of the Air Force that he even found out about this report. When there were reports of contamination at Cannon Air Force Base last year, the two congressional delegates were asking the Air Force to improve its relationship with the community and communication on what's happening at Cannon. And they were also requesting the site inspection reports for Kirtland Air Force Base and Holloman Air Force Base, which were submitted to the New Mexico Environment Department. And so that's how I found out that there were even reports for the other two bases as well.
So that brings up a question about Kirtland and PFAS. Is that a concern there? Do you know? Have you been able to look at that report yet?
Yeah, so that site inspection report does not show PFAS contamination at Kirtland.
Okay. And real quick, let's take a trip over to Cannon, where they also had PFAS contamination, not to the level that we're seeing at Holloman. But an interesting wrinkle there has to do with the Air Force's response. It's also a good time to mention that there's a New Mexico tie to very high up in the Air Force. The Secretary of the Air Force is former New Mexico Congresswoman Heather Wilson. So first talk a little bit about what happened with the permits there at Cannon for the cleanup.
Right. So last fall, Cannon, the state of New Mexico got this site inspection report for Cannon Air Force Base, and it turned out that there was PFAS contamination at the base, in the groundwater that supplies the base and groundwater that supplies private wells and the dairies in the area. And so the state of New Mexico issued a notice of violation against the Air Force, and the Air Force has been supplying drinking water to those impacted. And, you know, everybody was kind of looking to see what the widespread impacts were. The state of New Mexico was very concerned, particularly because of the dairy industry in that area. And so, as I understand it, the Air Force and the state of New Mexico were working together on a remediation plan. And then in December, the state of New Mexico issued it's a kind of a routine hazardous waste permit for Cannon Air Force Base, and included within that permit some language about the PFAS contamination. And as I understand it, the state was, you know, everybody's kind of moving ahead thinking that they have the cooperation of the Air Force on this. And in January, the Air Force filed a lawsuit against the state of New Mexico and the New Mexico Environment Department over this, you know, kind of order to be cleaning up the PFAS.
So that's very early on in that process. We'll have to see what happens there. At the heart of this really is the fact that, in my understanding, that the EPA hasn't really issued any maximum contamination levels for these PFAS. The current administration, that doesn't seem very likely. Congressman Ben Ray Lujan, who we mentioned earlier, is calling for immediate action on this. You talked about the environment secretary, same sort of thing. But what can happen quickly in a situation like this?
I am not sure what can happen quickly. I would hope that at the very least, the Air Force is communicating with people at Holloman and the community around there, and cooperating with the New Mexico Environment Department and the congressional delegation. I would love to see the Secretary of the Air Force addressing these issues from her, you know, state that elected her to
hire. She knows about these bases better than just about anybody, right?
Right. And the issue with the EPA is really tricky because a few years ago, recognizing that the PFAS is a problem, the EPA started coming up with these lifetime health advisories. And so they're not a hard and fast rule or a standard like you have for the Drinking Water Act, but they're advisories with the intention of, as the EPA learned more about the health impacts and the scope of the problem, that there would be health standards and management plans. And now Politico reported last month that the EPA under the Trump administration is backing away from a management plan and backing away from establishing federal standards. So I just feel like this is a really troubling issue for New Mexico. And it is really, as a New Mexican, like not even as a reporter chasing this story, but as a New Mexican, I would like to know that not just our drinking water is safe, but the water that we have as a state to sustain a future is safe, and that, you know, these installations that come to New Mexico, that we're thinking about the long-term future of all of the state's water resources.
So real quick, let's take a moment to, I think this is a good time to remind everybody, if you have specific questions about any of what we've been talking about, please submit those on Facebook, and we'll see if Laura can help us out with that. And I'll put you on the spot myself, because I'm just wondering if you have any advice for people who may be seeing this that feel just the way you just described about what they can do. Is it calling the Air Force themselves? What do you think, just getting into this?
I think it's really important that people let their congressional delegates know that they're worried about this or they have questions about it. The New Mexico congressional delegation is very engaged and informed on these issues. And so I think letting your Congress people know that you're concerned is a big part of a first step. But then I think when there are community meetings, there were community meetings out at, or there was a community meeting out at Cannon, is showing up for those meetings and asking your questions and listening and continuing to ask the questions.
And, of course, you have tried to get a hold of the Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson as well. Haven't had any luck yet, but I assume you'll continue to do that. Mm-hmm. Can you give any sort of a hint on what else may be coming soon in this story for readers?
I think it'll be interesting to see if New Mexico can take any sort of action against Holloman Air Force Base. I think given what has happened when New Mexico took action against Cannon, I don't really know what we can do. So it'll be interesting to see how the New Mexico Environment Department responds, how the governor responds. And I know that the congressional delegation and likely, I would imagine, the governor as well, have been trying to communicate with Secretary Wilson on the issue.
And, you know, another part of this is I feel like we do, and we've heard some of this on social media in terms of every election, it seems like we talk to these congressional candidates about the importance of the labs. These are important jobs for the states, not the labs, those two, but the bases in this case. Important jobs to New Mexico. We always really want to protect those. They are important. But have we sort of given too much of a leash on these things in the sake of jobs, do you think? Is this a wake-up call on that front?
My personal opinion is that yes. I mean, if you look at the federal installations in New Mexico, whether it's the labs or the bases or WIP, New Mexico has, yes, we have jobs, and there's a certain segment of the economy that is very closely tied into those federal installations, but taking a long-term, big-picture view of the state's sustainability in the long term, we spend an extraordinary amount of time and money trying to make sure that these facilities operate within the current structure of the regulations, but also there's emerging information all of the time about the long-term impacts of so many of the environmental, so there's so many environmental and public health impacts. And I think it's really important for us as a state to really question how much a say we have in protecting ourselves in the future.
Because there have been many people for years saying that everything with Kirtland and the jet fuel spill there taking way too long is way too slow there, too. And we should mention, too, that this situation with Holloman and Cannon, not unique even to New Mexico. There are other states that are dealing with it, most notably Michigan, where they've got contamination at a now closed Air Force base there. But the basic response there sounds like the Air Force is saying, we're not obligated to follow your state rules on this. We are obligated to the federal rules, which are not this way. So again, it's going to be really interesting to see how states try to exert some influence and some power on this. Okay, we do have some questions starting to come in, so hit you up with these. Put on your science hat here. Kathy wants to know, when we talk about this contaminant level, 70 per trillion lifetime, well, would one glass a day put you in danger? What are we talking about there? Do you have any idea what that boils down to?
I do not, and that's a good question. But I think for the sake of looking at the bases, it's really the scale. It's just whether it's 300 times the lifetime exposure or 18,000 times, I think we can safely say that's very bad.
Yeah.
So the 70, again, it's a guideline and it's kind of emerging information. And I think we'll find out more in the coming years, hopefully find out more in the coming years.
Absolutely. And Donna Jo asked, we've touched on this a little bit, but she wants to know how far reaching is the contamination? And I assume this is Holloman.
Okay. So according to the site inspection report, it is contained within the groundwater below Holloman that is brackish. But I think that's the big question that the New Mexico Environment Department and others, I would imagine the Office of the State Engineer, would need to be involved too.
Aren't we learning all the time too about what we don't know about the brackish water and aquifers and where all the water underneath goes and all that? So we're a little bit blind on that even, aren't we?
We are. And I think, I mean, last year when I was interviewing all the gubernatorial candidates on water issues for New Mexico Political Report, a couple of the candidates brought up this issue of we've got plenty of water in New Mexico, it's just that it's brackish and we need to take advantage of that resource. And if that is some sort of long-term strategy, I should mention that it was not Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham who brought that up. But if people are thinking that the brackish groundwater is a sort of long-term solution to New Mexico's groundwater problems, then these issues do seem even more serious.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but some brackish water is rechargeable. Some of it's not, right? Once we use it, it might be gone.
Right.
It's not an easy, simple scenario. Okay, next, this isn't really a question, and I'm going to ask a question back to Jake, who's sending this in. He says the water under Holloman has never been drinkable even before the base was there. I'm not sure, Jake, if you're saying that there was contamination before Holloman was there, or if it's just never been treated, or what exactly is going on there. But do you know anything about the history of the water in that area?
Probably just that I'm guessing he's referring to the fact that it is brackish groundwater.
Yeah.
So people aren't just pulling it out of their wells and drinking it.
So help us understand, too, when it comes to if it is just in that brackish water, what we're going to have to learn now is where all that comes and goes in that brackish water to really see how far out that might go into what plants are taking in, and then via that, what animals might be taking in, or humans, right?
Yeah, just getting a broader understanding of not just drinking water, which is a different class of water when it comes to regulation. So not just understanding how it might affect water that people are drinking, but how it affects all water resources and public health and the environment.
It's not as simple as just whether or not the water's safe to drink. And so you said this was kind of a preliminary study that you based your report on. So aside from whatever the State Environment Department tries to do here or the congressional delegation, what are next steps along the natural process of this?
I would think in a world where all the regulatory agencies worked with the environment and public health in mind, I would imagine that the Air Force and the New Mexico Environment Department, the Office of the State Engineer, the EPA, communities, stakeholders would all be communicating and working together to understand how best to protect the environment, public health, drinking water, but also workers, people who have been exposed to these chemicals through their line of work or who maybe bring it home to their families or their communities. I mean, I think it's such a wide-ranging issue.
Do we even know if the source of contaminations there at Holloman, these PFAS, that practice is fully stopped there? Do we know that even?
I don't know that for sure, but I would imagine that it has been.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, we're almost out of time here, but if you have any last-minute questions, please send those in. Laura, really appreciate your time on this and look forward to the future reporting that I know you're going to have on this. This is a big, big story for New Mexico, and especially when you think about just not Holloman, but also Cannon and what we still have going on at Kirtland. It's going to be very interesting to see, and maybe we get Heather Wilson in at some point and can talk to her about some of these things, too, when she comes through. Before we let you leave, do a little talk as well about this week is Our Land on New Mexico in Focus. We're thrilled to have you doing monthly reports on the environment here in New Mexico. Tell us a little bit about what you have in store this week.
So this month's episode of Our Land is really exciting because we kind of we're looking at the importance of temporary waterways in New Mexico and also looking at a federal rule that might change how they're protected. But We do some really exciting stuff for this episode. We went up to the Sandias with Cliff Dom from UNM's biology department and learned about springs and little wetlands up in the Sandias, and then went down to the banks of the Rio Grande to talk to Rachel Kahn with Amigos Bravos about some of the problems with federal protections or lack thereof for these temporary waterways and why they're so important to New Mexico. And I think anybody watching right now might not realize it necessarily, but there are temporary waterways all over New Mexico, probably in your own neighborhood, and they're really cool and really important.
And so talk about what some of those things are, and they have different classifications, like intermittent, ephemeral. Talk about these temporary waterways.
Right. So there's all different kinds. There's there are springs that come out of, like, up in the Sandias. There's about 30 different springs that people have recorded that are groundwater fed, and they might not flow the whole year, and they don't flow for really far, but they make these little wetlands, and they're important to wildlife and habitat up there. And then, you know, everybody's probably familiar with arroyos in New Mexico that just run, might just run after a monsoon or with snow melt. And then we have really some neat wetlands in New Mexico too, sort of wet meadows up in the mountains or slope wetlands that might not be connected to a stream or a river, but are groundwater fed. And so there's all different classes, and most of those will no longer be protected under the Clean Water Act, under a new federal rule. And here in New Mexico, more than 90% of our waterways are considered temporary waters.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to that report Friday night at 7 on New Mexico PBS, or you can find it online. Lots of different places you can find it on New Mexico in Focus. Our Land has its own Facebook page, its own YouTube page. Highly recommend you subscribe, like those, so you can see all the other great reports. Feed the Hood is still one of my favorites that you guys have done. Mm-hmm. We've done things recently about urban forests. We've done replanting trees after wildfires. We've done how-to about what to do around your house to protect from wildfires. Really great reports. We're so thrilled to have you on board doing those. And thank you for the time today. And we look forward to what comes next at Holloman and Cannon and Kirtland.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Laura.